Hi, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Legion M. They are a wonderful company. We love working with them. You can go to their website, Legion M. They're also on all the various socials. They do really fun meetups. You can talk to directors. You can become a part of the projects they choose. They even have a program right now where you can help them find great movies to support. So go to their website to learn more. We also want to remind you that we have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies.
Ava DuVernay is one of the busiest people in show business, and we were grateful that she made time to talk with us. I didn't want to eat up any of that time rattling off her credits or her many milestones, but they really ought to be mentioned. She was the first black woman to win the directing award in the U.S. drama competition at the Sundance Film Festival for her feature Middle of Nowhere. For Selma, she became the first black female director to have her film nominated for an Academy Award as Best Picture. In 2017, she was nominated for an Oscar for Best Documentary Feature for 13th. She was also the first black woman to direct a big-budget Hollywood movie, A Wrinkle in Time. She created the series Queen Sugar and her powerful miniseries When They See Us, based on the 1989 Central Park jogger case, set records for the millions of people who saw it on Netflix. She is clearly a remarkable woman. And we were thrilled to speak with her, even for an abbreviated episode of our podcast. Hi, I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies. And if I were to list our guests' credits and honors, it would take up the entire show. So we'll get to all of that, because it's Ava DuVernay, and you are... magnificence all to yourself, and an inspiration, I'm sure, to a whole lot of people for what you have achieved.
Well, very kind of you, and I'm so happy to be here with the Maltins. This is a thing, and I'm really honored. You know, a longtime admirer of you and all of your work, and the way that you've shaped the culture through your, you know, criticism and advocacy, and so I'm really happy to be here with you.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you. Yeah. And a little off main topic, or topic A, your incredible work. You're hosting The Essentials on TCM with Ben Mankiewicz.
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to follow in the Maltin footsteps.
You're doing it, man. He was just saying that he loves your choices.
Oh, I'm glad. Well, that means a lot to me.
It's such an interesting and unpredictable series of films, and good for you, and lucky you too.
What a joy! What an opportunity to be presented with. Just to whatever you feel like people should be watching, what people should know, what they're not seeing. So I really try to dig into the things that I feel are a little off the beaten path, especially as it relates to people of color and women.
Sure.
And so it's been fun.
Wonderful. You, as I say, you're an inspiring person. All the films that you've done, the honors that have come your way from the Academy, from the Film Independent, from every entity we could name. Who inspired you?
You know, the funny thing is I don't have any formal artists in the family, you know, but there's art all around us every day when you really look. People in your family who may crochet or cook or arrange flowers in a certain way. And so I come from a long line of women, black women in my family, who were artistic in their everyday life, who were storytellers, who were super entertaining. And who loved films. And so my family member who loved films and who really gifted me with a love of film and who inspired me through her love of film is my Aunt Denise, who since passed away, but she really, she loved movies. She loved movies so much. And as a black woman from Compton, the fact that she loved films that she didn't see herself in was always bittersweet to me. Mm. And so I think that, you know, in my essentials, I chose Marty. Mm-hmm. In my you know, overall canon of films that I love, or a lot of films that she introduced me to, where you don't see, you know, anyone that looks like us, but mm-hmm. she always was connected to the universal themes or, you know, the craft. And so I think in her introduction of films to me, you know, she was inspiring me, you know, by opening a window, opening a whole new world for me that I wouldn't have seen otherwise.
What strikes me, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that I don't get the idea you ever asked for permission to do anything that you did. You just started out and said, I'm going to do this. Mm. And you did. And today, of course, it's more possible for people to do things with the technology, right. With the cost coming down.
We have a lot at our fingertips.
Yeah, we do. You know? We do. We do a lot more tools, mm-hmm. accessible to a lot more people. I mean, look at us. We're, you know, going to be broadcasting this to anyone who has ears who can listen.
Yeah.
And we aren't in a big studio fancy, and we don't have to have permission to do this.
No, where we are, though, is a very important place.
Yes.
And I'm so excited that we're here.
Yes.
That's
the Array campus.
Yes.
In historic Filipino town.
Yes.
In Los
Thank
Angeles.
You. Thank you, Leonard. This is my campus that I put together, a creative campus. And right now we're sitting in our screening room, which we call the Amanda Theater. And Amanda is the middle name of that aunt. Denise Amanda Sexton.
Oh, I know. God bless her.
Denise,
that's great.
God bless her. She would love this, sitting with Leonard Maltin in a theater that I own, named after her. I could cry if I let myself, but I'm going to smile instead.
I'm dying over these seats, I'm going to tell you. I want them in my house.
Yes.
I want them. They're beautiful.
Yes.
It's a beautiful theater, and it's a beautiful space.
Thank you.
Even the way the building is painted, everything about it is. It's exciting, and I can only imagine a young person who, you know I'm spoiled because I grew up with him and I got to be around this kind of stuff, but for somebody who didn't, to walk into this, you lose your damn mind.
Yeah, but the thing I love about you is, even though you grew up around this, you don't take it for granted. You still get excited about it, which is something, you really love it.
Thank you. Yeah. I do, but you know, it's because when you're around people who, feel that way, you know, my dad has always gotten excited about things, always. And we'll talk about, you know, we don't talk about famous people. We talk about who excites you and who'd you get to meet. And he'll come home and he'll say, oh my God, I got to meet so-and-so today. And that's, you know.
That's so good.
But we like it that way.
Yeah,
we like it
absolutely.
That way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Know? I love that.
Your first filmmaking venture was very close to home in every sense of that. You did something that was achievable. See, I tried making home movies with my friends when I was in junior high school, and in those days we had 8mm film, no sound, and it was just a home movie camera.
Yeah.
And in my head, though, I was thinking about movies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can do wonderful things with an 8mm camera without sound, but you can't make a Hollywood movie.
Right.
I wasn't thinking to scale.
Sure.
But you did. You told a story about a woman going to a shopping mall.
You're talking about my very, very
Your
first
very
movie.
First.
We're going
oh,
back,
wow,
my
you're
friend.
Going really bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My first short.
Yeah.
My mother is the one who told me. I was really thinking of like, what could I do? And I've gone to her several times and said, what should I make? I'm trying to make this first thing. And she said, you know, I don't know anything about movies. This is my mother. But you should make something that means something to you. And so I started thinking of a small story in one location and remembered a story that she told me about being a single mom with her three girls in Compton. And when she was having a hard day or didn't have money to pay the bills, she would dress her girls up. She would slick back our hair, put on our Sunday finest, put on our patent leather shoes, even if it was a Wednesday in the middle of the day, and take us to the local grocery store because everyone would say, My, aren't your girls beautiful? Aww. You're doing such a great job with those girls. And it would just give her a lift, and it would allow her to go on with, you know, the challenges of her daily life.
I love that.
I know. And so that's what the film was about. And I've continued to just try to, you know, even my first feature is about, my mother always reminds me, do something that means something to you.
Yeah.
So I think that really is, when I look at my work, it and I feel like I'm on a psychiatrist's couch or something because I never really talked this through. But now I can look at my work and see that I've really kept that in mind. Mm-hmm. You know, everything that I'm doing are things that mean something to me. Yeah.
That's yet, what it's supposed to be. I mean, that's that's what it's supposed to be. You're wearing this shirt. Again, we can jump around because there's so much. But I have been, because of you, I've been teaching everybody Exonerated 5.
Yes.
I've been running around like a crazy person just screaming at strangers, Exonerated 5. But you are, you're wearing this shirt, and I am one of those people that decided, oh, I'll watch all four today.
Oh, well, that's rough. That's a rough
You
one.
Owe me for therapy, lady. That was rough. But I'm talking about When They See Us, which is so recent. And then I watched the special with Oprah.
Oh, well, then you were
which
in for it.
The funniest part of that was that all of your stars kept going, hi, Oprah. Like, all of a sudden, these cool-looking people who so eloquent, they look over, hi, Oprah, hello.
Everyone gets a little shy around her.
It was really funny and wonderful.
Yeah, it was a good time. It was a good time. It's always nice after a film to get everyone back together.
Yeah.
Time has passed, you see each other, and you actually see what you made.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing about premieres. They sometimes feel kind of, you know, self-laudatory and kind of industry patting itself on the back. But for the filmmakers and the cast, it's just a great reunion.
Sure.
It's a party.
You dress up. People are clean.
Yeah.
They weren't that way on set.
You slept.
Yes, exactly.
But no craft service.
No.
Shucks. Darn. Picky.
No. Now, at one time, well, even today, actually, a lot of filmmakers really covet a theatrical opening for their movie, whether it's a documentary or a dramatic film, a narrative film. And if you don't open in New York, you know, New York and L.A., maybe New York, L.A., Chicago, you're missing something. But When They See Us was apparently streamed by 23 million people on Netflix. Mm-hmm.
That was in June. It's more than that now.
Yeah. And 20 million of that was me. So
she's just playing it over and over. I love that.
That's right.
But I think that's really changed, Leonard, in terms of what filmmakers are valuing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I remember even 5 years ago, you know, I had a distribution company. I still have a distribution company, Array. We're standing at, sitting at the Array campus, and it was all based on distribution and breaking down walls and making sure that our work as women and people of color were reaching audiences. And it was all about the theater. L.A., New York, Chicago, top five markets, first weekend box office, per screen, average. I mean, all that stuff we used to care about. It's just, I mean, I'm working with filmmakers. We're distributing work. We have a direct output deal with Netflix. The number of times people ask me about L.A., New York, and Chicago is about half as much as it used to be, and it's dwindling every day. And so that certainly says something about the theatrical experience that's, you know, a challenge for those of us who make work for the screen. But for me, it's more important for people to see the story.
Sure.
So whether or not you're watching it on, I mean, literally, When They See Us, it is a film in four parts. Mm-hmm. I mean, we made that thing. It is a film. And you know, it hurt me when my 13-year-old niece said, I watched it all. Oh, my gosh. And I knew that she, I said, well, when did you watch it all? Last night. And I knew that she was traveling. So I said, how how did you watch it last night when you all were on your way to L.A.?
On my watch?
I watched it on my phone. And yeah, on my phone. I said, you watched it on your phone? And she was like, oh, my gosh, I cried. It was so good. This is what I learned. This is what I saw. This is what I felt. And it's like, what do you say at that point? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know? She absorbed the story.
That's right.
She got it.
It moved her.
How do you feel about that? What do you feel about that in terms of the changing landscape?
Well,
of,
I mean, I'm of two minds. Yeah. As they say, you should be able to hold two contradictory thoughts.
Yeah.
An intelligent person should be able to do that.
Yeah.
I love seeing movies on a big screen in a theater. I love it. I'll never stop loving it.
Yeah.
But there's just no denying the accessibility and the convenience and of streaming, of downloading, of Blu-rays, of whatever it may be, in your home or on a train or on a bus.
Well,
people sort of assume that he's going to poo-poo it.
Yeah, that's why I'm so fascinated by this.
Well, no, because I'd be, I could stick my head in the sand like an ostrich, but I don't think that's productive.
Sure, good.
I don't think that's productive.
Love that.
We want people to see the movies.
That's right. That's at the end of the day, that's what it is.
Again, if you have the choice, You have the option.
Yeah. Yes.
You can go to a theater.
That's right.
Do it.
But many people don't.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of different reasons.
Well, we learned, we got to interview Dee Reese right before Mudbound was going to come out. Mm-hmm. And we learned a lot from her because it's 2.5, almost 3 years now. She was one of the first people who said to us, my movie is going to be available on the same day around the world.
Sure.
My movie is getting out to all those people. Yeah. On top of that, when the movie ends and they do those little pop-ups, Pariah will pop up.
Sure.
And people who didn't see that, which is from 2009, will go, oh, she has another movie.
That's right. That's right.
And honestly, it's shaped a lot of what we've felt.
Yeah.
But when you also think about it, and that's totally right, she's a great filmmaker. Shout out to Dee Reese. But, you know, in addition to that, you know, I grew up in Compton.
Mm.
And you cannot see the film straight out of Compton in Compton because there's no movie theater in Compton. I made a film called Selma. You can't see Selma in Selma. There's no movie theater in Selma, right? These are black and brown communities. These are economically depressed communities that just don't have a movie theater. So then what do they get to see? My family's from Montgomery, Alabama. They're not watching art house films. The only way they're going to see Mudbound or Pariah is streaming, and they should be allowed to do that. But then also as women filmmakers, as black filmmakers, we're told, especially as black filmmakers, that our work will not translate outside of the United States. But so it's important in terms of scale and scope of our work. And so it's a lot of pros and cons, but it's great to hear people who are open to the conversation.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, as I say, you know, adapt or die is what I say.
You know,
I mean
let's adapt.
Here we are podcasting.
That's
you
right.
Know? You know, at one time, you were a publicist.
Yeah.
I used to pitch you.
Yes.
At Entertainment Tonight.
Back in the day, right?
Yes.
And Entertainment Tonight would reach as many as, on a good night, 11 or 12 million people in one night. That's astonishing.
Yeah.
Now you consider it a hit if you reach six figures.
That's right.
You know, seven figures, rather.
Yeah.
And the low seven figures.
Right.
And, you know, but
it's more to look at, more places to turn your attention. You
exactly.
Know?
Yeah. And things to occupy your mind in a productive and a fruitful way.
That's right.
So that means there's more clutter, too.
That's true.
How do you cut through all that clutter?
Right, right.
Now, what was, I mean, when you were a publicist and you were an active publicist with your own shingle.
I did. Yes.
How many people did you have working for you?
There was a small shop. Maybe there were five of us.
Well, that's not tiny.
Small. Yeah, yeah. Not too bad.
Some people just do it themselves.
I know. Sometimes I look up and say, could I just save some money? But yeah, it was five of us. Me, a couple publicists, and an assistant.
What was your best coup? You worked on some pretty high-profile films.
I think my two favorites that I always think about, I was a part of Dreamgirls.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really special just because I love the film.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, big stars to work with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Eddie Murphy, it's Beyonce, it's Jamie Foxx, it's Bill Condon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the choreography, the music, the dancing. I'm a big, you know, film musical guy. Love a good West Side Story. Love all that good stuff. And so I just really thought that the craft in the film was really special.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. And to work on that was my first international campaign. So I'm in Berlin with Beyonce. I'm making sure Jamie's getting out of his car in France. It's it's just handling the film and really making sure that that it was, you know, speaking to a very wide audience. The other one that I love is a smaller film, but it was a big deal to me at the time. My agency was awarded the campaign for a film called Collateral, Michael Mann's film. And, you know, I just loved working on that film. You know, it's Tom Cruise, Jada Pinkett, Jamie Foxx, a young Mark Ruffalo, a young Javier Bardem that most people forget about.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember they made it here in L.A. on digital cameras.
And fantastic use of L.A. location.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It looked so good. It looked like delicious. You just wanted to eat it. It was so – cut it up, put some butter on it. It was so good looking. And I just remember the way it looked. I was on set while it was being filmed. I was able to, you know, be on the – on the unit publicity team, and then to distribute, at the release campaign. And I just thought, look at all the different kinds of people, cultures of people in this, you know, black, brown, white, in this story with this collision of places in LA, and digitally made, like made on digital cameras. Oh, yeah. One of the first on those great Viper cameras could see through the night, you know? I mean, it's just crystal clear. So that was a big formative film for me to work on, but also it got me thinking about being a filmmaker.
Sure.
And that I credit Michael Mann. Every time I see Michael Mann, I say, thanks.
It's your fault. It's your fault.
He's actually going to be coming to Array in our new fall program. We haven't announced it, but we're going to screen Collateral here.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, yeah. And he's going to come check it out.
Oh, so. Tell people neat. About this place.
This place is really special to me. It's three buildings in historic Filipino town. No one ever gets it right. Thank you, Leonard. they always say L.A., but it is important. This is historic Filipino town. It's a part of L.A. that has a lot of culture and legacy. And so we've come here. There's three buildings here. From the outside, they look like three different buildings, but when you get into the back, they're all connected. And there is a cinema lounge, our big space where you walked in with the big Samsung huge screen. And then we have our 50-seat stadium style theater here. We do production out of the first building, so there are editing bays and writers' rooms at the top. And then the third building is our development, our production offices, and our pre-production space. And so it's kind of like, you know, my own little place to work and to invite other people to do work.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful.
Thank you.
You're a mogul.
You are.
or a mogulette.
I'm a mini mogul on this corner. Hey. This corner. That's it.
There are worse things, right?
I'll take it.
No, I was saying, I found out about Array because of Instagram.
Okay.
It popped up and I thought, this is cool.
Oh,
what's
cool.
this? And then I found out it was you.
Oh, wow.
It took a minute,
well,
you know, because I was looking and reading and thinking, this is really, I really like this.
I love that.
Where is this place? And finding out that it's here,
yes,
and that all that's going on, it's very exciting.
I hope
very
you'll come
exciting.
Check out some films here.
We would love to. We would love to.
This now, you mentioned Beyonce promoting Dreamgirls. Little could you have dreamt at that moment that you wind up directing her and Jay-Z in a music video.
Wow. Come on, Leonard. You can know the full
He's a deep dive. He's
a deep dive
here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right. I never thought of that. No.
He's totally part of the Bayhive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I never
thought about that. But yeah, it's been a beautiful career. And I'm 10 years in. It'll be 10 years next year.
Wow.
And so it's exciting.
Surviving is number one.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely,
job one.
Absolutely.
Hanging in there.
But yeah, I look at Mike Nichols and I look at Sidney Lumet and I want to be, you know, I want to have my cane yelling action and cut. I look at Agnes Varda, you know, it's not many that, you know, that are still making, actively shooting at that age.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my hope for myself.
But you remind me of Kevin Feige. Because
I've never heard that before.
I'm saying
there's a new one.
There's a reason, I promise. We've known him for a while now, and he's very generous to my dad and brings his movies to class. And
because he's a loyal USC cinema grad,
yeah.
And a lot.
But he's very generous with his time. And something that we're always amazed by is he's the kind of guy who can answer your business questions down to the smallest, most minute detail. And then someone will say, on page 13 of the comic book, blah, and he can answer that question too. And that's why because you are such a boss, where you're talking about markets and all this stuff, and it's because of all the different things you've done.
Mm-hmm.
But then I know you cut into something else. It's like, well, let's talk Singing in the Rain. Done.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Let's dance together.
Yeah. It's been fun. I mean, the example of just the essentials.
Yeah.
And being able to, you know, for me, talk about something on that show on TCM that doesn't have to do with, you know, being necessarily a woman or a person of color. It's just my joy of films.
Yeah.
Because most of the time when I'm asked on to do an interview, it's always kind of steeped in, you know, in identity as opposed to craft. I'm rarely asked about craft.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You mentioned Marty before, the wonderful film with Ernest Borgnine, the Oscar-winning film.
Yes.
And there is something special about that movie. It appeals to everybody.
Yes.
It's about—
What is it?
It's
what is it that we love?
I think part of it is a friend of mine who's taught screenwriting for many years used to show it to her students every semester without fail. And these are 20-somethings.
Yeah.
How are they supposed to relate to a film from 1955 about an unattractive butcher from the Bronx who's still living with his mother? Well, because we see something of ourselves in that character.
Yeah.
And it's played so beautifully.
Yeah, and it's written so beautifully.
And it's written so beautifully by Patty Chayefsky, one of the great writers, one of the great dramatists of that era. And it just
universal truth.
Yep,
right?
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And when you strip everything else away,
that's right.
It's human nature.
That's right.
It's human response to different pressures and different events that happen in a life.
Pain, the sorrow, the longing, all those things.
Yeah, all of that.
I love that movie. It's so good. I love the movie.
Now, the other thing I admire about you is that you're also an entrepreneur. And it seems like you had that gene from the very start, from if I'm reading your resume correctly.
Yes.
I love this idea that you did tell me about your beauty shop and barber shop.
Oh gosh.
Enterprise. That
You're
sounds
going
so
way
interesting.
Back.
Well, I found it fascinating.
I did. I decided that I wanted to have a new way to reach black folks, to tell them about the films that I was publicizing.
Mm-hmm.
This is when I was a publicist.
Mhm.
Entertainment Tonight is one way, but what is the way to just get my clients in front of people? So I started a network called Urban Beauty Collective, where I took all of the addresses and telephone numbers of all of the black beauty salons and barbershops around the country. There were over 20,000 in all of the top markets. And this is back when we had VHS.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go to the studios and say, I have a network where I can get your trailer in front of 20,000 black beauty salons and barbershops.
Wow.
And I said $1,000 per minute.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, and I could expose you to that many people. Now for Warner Brothers and Sony, that was like, great,
yes,
here.
Nothing. Yeah. Yeah,
nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, it was a revolutionary idea. And so we would produce this little show, put it on on VHS every month, mail it in through a big mailing house, and it became a real thing. Barbershops, beauty salons, I'm like, wait, how do you get it? Why am I not getting it? I want it. We had a little sticker in the window. You were a UBC shop. That means when you were in getting your hair done, you could watch 50 trailers from the studios, and it was just something in the salon. So anyway, always thinking of ways. I got that from my dad. Always thinking of ways to reach people where they are.
That's just
so smart.
It's a smart idea.
It was fun.
Jeez.
It was fun.
It's smart. Yeah. Now, all right, what was the biggest change? That's the only word I can think of. From your regular MO when you were making A Wrinkle in Time.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, I've had major producers and directors say to me, it doesn't matter what budget you have, there's still enough time.
That's right.
Never enough time.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're still trying to make your day. What did you find?
You know, I think that's certainly the case, never enough time. But what I really loved from going from something like Selma to something this, or 13th, which was three people made that to Wrinkle in Time, is just the sheer numbers of people who can take more time to do their job because they're not doing multiple jobs.
Ah,
and so, you know, the job is done well. There's an improvement in the quality of the work, I think, because, you know, you don't have to do four people's job. You don't have to carry three people's stuff. You don't have to. You can just kind of focus on your thing. And so it was a cornucopia of departments and positions. And it's like more jobs than you even knew exist.
But they all have to have you answer their questions.
They do, which I enjoy. Because I'm not afraid to say, I don't know. Let's find out together. That's... Or why don't you find out and bring me three options? Or this is what I think it is, but go double check. Or I don't know.
What does Oprah need? Tell me what Oprah
That's
needs.
Right. But a lot of the times I do know. And so, you know, I think, you know, folks really, respect your direction if you're also just as easy with not giving it when you're not sure.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very wise.
Yeah.
That's very wise.
And humane.
Right. You're sending people on a wild goose chase to do something and you're not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes no sense. Yeah. And yet some people do that.
I'm that's sure. right. Just because they don't want to say, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They think that's a sign of weakness.
Yeah. They do. Well, there is a way to say it where it's weak. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
There's a way to say it authoritatively. You know what? I'm not sure. Let's check them. It's all in the posture.
That's right. That's very publicist. Being able to stand there and go, I don't have a clue, but here's
I'm
what we're
going to find out. Yes.
I have to tell you, I was present. I was lucky enough. My wife and I were lucky enough to be present at the Directors Guild for your first screening of Selma.
Oh, wow.
There. Was it a Saturday morning or Sunday
morning? Yes, I remember
early
that.
Early afternoon.
Wow.
And that was a powerful experience. Mm. Let me tell you, sometimes you can feel an audience.
Yes.
And you can feel, you're not talking to anybody saying, well, how are you liking this? Are you enjoying this?
Yeah.
You can just feel
that
they're engaged and involved. And that's what happened that day.
Oh, I love that.
And it just was such a knockout.
I was so scared.
Well, how could you not be?
I was so scared.
How could you not be? I remember just being,
gosh, more scared than I'd ever been when that film came out.
Mm-hmm.
The premiere was at AFI at the Cinematheque.
Mm-hmm.
At part of AFI Fest.
Yeah.
And I remember being in the bathroom while I was playing and literally just becoming sick and crying and just having, I don't know why I thought I could do this. This is too much. I'm never going to be able to make a film again. I mean, I was gone in my head, just like preparing for failure. And I remember they were like 10 minutes until the lights up and I walked out and I was standing in the wings. And it was so quiet, I thought, this is a disaster. This is a disaster. And it was, you could hear a pin drop, and I just like, oh my gosh. And then I heard,
oh.
And I was like, wait, what? And I looked around, and it's like, you can see the crowd is illuminated by the film, the lights from the film. And people are crying.
Yeah.
I thought, wait, what? Maybe a few people, and then a roar of applause, and from there everything happened. But that doubt, that fear that I think every filmmaker has continuously.
Sure.
I mean, it continues;
of
it
course.
Doesn't stop. But in that moment, I felt it in such a way. It was so deep. It was so frightening. I thought, why would anyone put themselves through this again?
Because you have to.
You have to.
Yeah, because
exactly right.
you have a drive to do it.
Yeah.
And you have a story. You have, I'm sure, other stories to tell.
That's right.
What is, to put it as blunt or briefly as possible, what's next?
Gosh, so many things.
Yeah.
Right now I'm really enjoying this era of like cinema, televised cinema is what
mm-hmm.
I call it.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
That's what When They See Us is. I mean, it's a film in four parts, and it's, you know, that streaming structure allowed it to be 5.5 hours long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No one else was going to let you do that in a theater. And so the idea of playing with form and length and, you know, is just really exciting to me. At no point did anyone come to me and say, oh, that's the episode's supposed to be just 60 minutes. Like, it's like 69 minutes, and no one cared.
Yeah.
Literally, no one at Netflix ever said anything. It's like, this is great. And so just playing with that, I'm really enjoying thinking about story in this
mm-hmm.
new space
mm-hmm.
where, you know, the time limits are not so restricted.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
And
Queen Sugar is still alive and
Queen
well.
Queen Sugar's still alive and well in our fourth season. And that's going strong. I have a new show that we start to shoot in 10 days. A brand new series called Cherish the Day. It's a mm-hmm. anthology, romance anthology. Every season there'll be a different couple that you follow.
Oh, how
Each episode is one day in the life of a couple. So the first episode is the day that they meet. The second episode is a year later when they run into each other again. Third episode is 3 months later. It's any day that's special in your life.
Wow.
You've been in a long, loving relationship.
Yes.
You think of the days. They're not necessarily always the anniversaries or the weddings.
No, no,
sometimes they're the days you do laundry, but she said this or you said that.
Yeah.
And so that's what it explores. So I'm excited about it.
That's terrific. And that will be a Netflix show as well?
That's on OWN, Oprah Winfrey's network.
Oh, on Oprah Winfrey's network.
Yes.
That's okay, too.
Good. I like that. I like working with them.
Yeah.
For sure.
And they obviously like working with you.
Yes, I enjoy it.
The effect
clock,
you've had.
Yeah.
On people. He's going to say the clock. There is never enough time with you.
I know. I
but
wish
you're
we could
also,
talk and talk.
I mean, because you're doing a million different
things.
Well,
that means we just have to talk again.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, you said it, and we're going to hold you to it.
I know you will.
Okay.
I know you will.
She's going to find us outside the fence.
You will.
Just, hi, guys.
I just wanted to say what an honor it was to be invited to talk with you. You know, you. If folks that didn't get the benefit of seeing you, it felt like nightly. Was it a weekly thing?
Mm-hmm.
I felt like
no,
I saw
it was
you
on several
all,
times a week.
So I mean, Leonard Maltin. It's Leonard Maltin. He's talking to me. He's looking at me in my face. He knows my work. Look, she's showing me a tattoo of him.
I've got my Leonard Maltin tattoo.
I mean, you're just a legend among us, an icon, and I thank you for, you know, even knowing who I am.
Well, flattery will get you everywhere. Thank true. You for saying all of that.
Thank you.
And, but the feeling is mutual.
Yeah.
He is your biggest fan.
Oh, and I appreciate it. Thanks for supporting me over the years.
Well, that's no chore.
Yeah.
That's no chore, believe me. And we'll tell folks where they can follow you and all of that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just Ava everywhere.
You are.
It's AVA on Twitter and Instagram.
You're like Madonna. And just Ava.
And Array Now is our collective of people who love film and TV, and you can follow us too.
And Jessie does, and that's how she got
I'm so glad.
Sucked it's into all of this.
Wonderful.
I love it. Well, I got to follow you back.
All right.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Ava.
You, sir.
We'll
appreciate
see you.
Again. You. Thank
Best
you.
Of luck.
Good night.
Maltin on Movies is sponsored today by Legion M, the first fan-owned entertainment company. They've got a lot of good stuff going on, and you can learn about it at legionm.com.